Hi, my name's Rustin. I'm 28 years old now. I live in a city. My father didn't like the pollution in the city, and that's why he decided that we should stay in our hometown village. When I was 22, I went to my hometown with my elder brother Adam. My brother and I reached our hometown. At that time, there was lots of snow in the village. Because I always like snowy weather, that's why I especially went in winter to enjoy it. My father welcomed us, and he had already prepared our favorite dish for supper. Hey, boys, how are you both? You look smart. Okay, get cleaned up. I prepared your favorite meal. We all had dinner. My father and brother then went to their rooms. At around 9 p.m., the door knocked. I opened it. It was my childhood friend, Mina. She was very beautiful, and she was also 22 years old.
Hi, Rustin. Nice to see you again.
I was feeling very shy, but I was so happy to see her. Hey, Mina, you too. Oh, you look great. Please come in.
Oh, really? Thank you. But I won't come in. I'm sorry, I just came here to see you.
Then Adam called me in a loud voice from his room. Rustin, come here, hurry! Before I could even say bye to Mina, I turned back. Mina had already left. I felt a little strange, but I thought maybe she was just maybe nervous because she hadn't seen me in a while. The night was wonderful and memorable, too. My hometown is beautiful. There were houses in the distance. In front of my house was a lake that was frozen like an iceberg. So one evening, while I was sitting by my window, I saw a teenage girl outside the window, probably 15 or 16 years old. She was laughing and enjoying her own company. She'd been wearing a long jacket and a big hood. I couldn't see her face. She was very happy and skating on top of the frozen ice. It made me happy to see her like that. It seemed that I too should maybe go join her. Why not? But I didn't know her. Once, I was sitting on the couch. It was 9 p.m. I heard something from the window. As I opened it, Mina appeared suddenly. Oh God, you frightened me. Haha, there's a door for you up front, dear.
I was just playing around.
Okay. Now come inside, yeah? As I opened the door to get her in, she was not anywhere. I was wondering whether she disappeared. I used to like Mina a lot, I'm not gonna lie. She was a very intelligent and talented girl. She'd understand my things very well, and would also tell me great solutions. She was someone I could talk to, and I liked that. I just couldn't understand one thing. Why she always used to come and see me every night at 9 p.m. Whenever I talked about going to Mina's house, my father used to stop me from going. Actually, he didn't even like Mina since childhood. He didn't want me to go to her house, because Mina herself used to come see me, so I didn't pay attention to that matter. The next day, I again saw that girl playing in the snow. It was a dark night. I found it strange that her parents sent her away in the middle of the night to go play. I went to the girl to let her know that it could be dangerous. When I went to her, I saw the girl was looking different. I was numb. She had a very dangerous deep injury to her mouth. Seeing that injury, it seemed as if someone had hit that girl very hard, and there was a huge cut in her throat, which seemed like it was done with a knife. I screamed and ran. The next day, I woke up in my bed with a scream. My father and brother came to me. My father said, "You okay? That girl, is she okay?" "There is no girl. Nothing happened to anyone. It's just a nightmare you saw, boys." "Yeah, brother. Don't take too much tension. Now get up and let's get some breakfast. You've been unconscious for a long time. We thought you were really sick." I didn't even pay much attention because the very next day, I saw the girl again. I tried to ignore the girl, but she was looking at me again and again, extending her hand and calling me towards her. The girl said,
"Jesse, I need you."
I was wondering how she knew my childhood nickname. Seeing that made my condition worse, because the place where my father lived was a deserted place. I thought it was a spirit, and immediately closed the windows of my house. Suddenly, I heard a sound, as if a human had jumped into the lake. It was her, that girl. I saw that there was a hole in the ice, and she was drowning. I ran to her and saw no one. I don't know what was happening. I came back to my room. The next day, my brother invited me to go ice skating. Obviously, I was scared to go, but I thought it was daytime, so nothing would happen. Plus, I wanted to check it out. But when we started skating, suddenly the snow started breaking. And at one place, my brother fell inside the ice. I tried very hard to save him. Fortunately, I got to him. I noticed that girl's presence. I heard her voice, which was whispering my name.
Resi, I need you.
It had been many days. Mina also didn't come to meet me, and I started worrying a lot for her. She used to come every day at 9 p.m. That day, without informing my father, I went to Mina's house to inquire about Mina's well-being. Her house was locked. I asked the people around where Mina and her mother had gone. I was blown away after seeing the reaction of people. They were shocked. Then, on asking a lot, an old man told me that Mina's mother had died 4 years before. She committed suicide by hanging herself in her own house, and Mina had disappeared many years ago, 6 to be exact, and the secret of her death has not been known to this date. Police were still investigating, but the case was cold. Knowing all that, I was completely blown away. My senses were above me, so I was going to my house thinking about these things. Then I saw the door of my house was slightly open. I saw that my father was trying to do something wrong with that girl. I couldn't even explain anything to them. Everything was transparent. It was as if her soul wanted to show me or explain something. I yelled at my father, "What the hell, Dad? Stop that!" But he was not deterred from doing so at all and kept doing wrong things. It was as if Mina and my father could not see me, and it was like I was watching a movie. That girl was repeatedly pointing towards the attic, so when I went towards the attic, I found someone else's skeleton there. I understood that my father must have killed that girl. Before I could call the police, they reached there and tried so hard to stop me, but I didn't listen at all. And when I didn't listen, they threatened to shoot me with a gun. My brother came from behind and started attacking me. Luckily, there were no bullets in my father's gun. My brother said, "Father, you close the door. I'll make him understand. Well, if you have to come to know the truth, then you should also know that our father has killed Mina when she was 17. One night when he was too drunk, he made a huge mistake. It was a mistake. Forgive him. Rustin, don't you love your father and me?" Oh my God. That little girl was Mina. She was killed at 9 p.m., and that's why Mina always came to meet at 9 p.m. "No, never. You're both psychos. How could you do this to a little girl? You're both criminals." Somehow I freed myself and started running from there, and ran and reached the near the lake, and both of them also came behind me. My brother grabbed me and started pulling my collar tightly, trying to choke me. Suddenly, that little girl came again from behind and stopped my brother. I was crying. "Mina, I'm sorry. I love you." As soon as she arrived, my brother's behavior changed completely. It seemed as if he'd been under someone's control, and he slowly started banging on the ice and broke it, and then fell into the cold lake. "No! Adam! No!" The water splashed. The ripples stopped. He drowned. After that, I ran to the police station and told the whole thing to the police. When the police reached the house, my father was missing. Until this date, he's not been found. During the winter of 2017, my friends and I embarked on an impromptu skiing trip. The idea was brought up randomly in conversation. We discussed and decided on a destination, Denver, Colorado. And in a burst of spontaneity and excitement, we booked the trip then and there. We arranged the renting of a car and an Airbnb. And a week and a half later, before the idea was even born, we all boarded an airplane and were headed to the snowy mountains of Colorado. Upon landing and picking up our rental, our lack of appropriate planning became evident. None of us had put much thought into the trip, fueled by pure excitement towards the unknown. But that exhilaration had blinded us of the situation. To put it plainly, we were extremely unprepared. In the excitement of it all, we failed to notice a brutal winter storm was approaching the vicinity of our Airbnb. We didn't plan appropriate clothes. We didn't plan and purchase snow chains for our cars. We didn't have emergency equipment for our car or ourselves. We were just a group of friends driving up the mountains when a brutal snowstorm approached. We had nothing more than a bag full of clothes and phone chargers. We trekked up a snow-covered road. Despite it having been plowed only hours before, we faced a sleek road with an inch of snow already accumulated. Every slip and skid was terrifying, but added to the adrenaline-fueled ambience in the car. I looked out the window and saw we were spiraling up a mountain. Feet away from our road were drops of hundreds of meters. Enormous valleys and canyons surrounded us. It was a mesmerizing sight. But each skid drew us closer to a drop that would result in the deaths of all of us. "Damn," I whispered, my nose up against the cold window. "We're really high up, guys." "Hell yeah," said Andrew with false excitement, hands on the wheel. The tension in the car was palpable, but it was well hidden behind a facade of excitement. Despite all odds and our lack of preparation, we arrived to our destination. We parked our car in a recently plowed driveway. Having been pushed aside, snow had accumulated to wall-sized barriers on the side of the driveway. These walls of snow towered 5 meters high. We quickly ran inside and turned on the heating system of the house. It was a cozy home, small but welcoming. The decoration was rustic and cabin-like. We all huddled around the chimney and turned on the television. It was a wonderful evening filled with laughs and conversations. We all decided to retreat into our rooms early in preparation for the long upcoming day of skiing. That day never came. At approximately 3 a.m, a house-shaking clamor of noise woke me. Picture frames fell from the wall. My glass of water on the nightstand tipped over. I opened my bedroom door and shouted into the dark house, "What the hell was that?" There was no way anyone was still asleep after that. Soon everyone's lights were on. We all discussed what could have been that explosion-like ruckus. I opened the main door and was greeted by a wall of snow. "Ugh," I said. Snow started to trickle in. I quickly shut the door.
"Guys?"
Vanessa said ominously. I turned to see she had opened the curtains, only to reveal a similar wall of snow covering the windows. "Looks like we're snowed in," Andrew chuckled, failing to realize the severity of the situation. We sat around the chimney the rest of the night discussing our options. Our cell phones had no reception. Things continued to worsen. At 8 a.m, the lights began to flicker. By 10 a.m., we lost all electricity in the house. By 1 p.m., we lost all water. But it wasn't until around 9 p.m. that we truly became worried.
"Someone has to be looking for us, right?"
my friend Monica whispered, drinking from her bottle of water. "You know," I said, "we should really ration our water and food. Who knows how long we're going to be stuck here?"
"Why? We're going to get rescued soon,"
Monica insisted, irritated. I insisted too, and we decided to ration our resources. That evening, our phone batteries died. 2 days passed, 4 days passed. A week passed. 2 weeks passed. We remained stranded, without a single sign that help was coming. During the first week, we concluded that an avalanche might have caused this. But that led to the elephant in the room we all wanted to avoid. What if we were under hundreds of meters of snow? By the second week, we had run out of food and water. We resorted to eating snow to satiate our thirst. But that worsened another problem we had. We were all freezing to death. After 2 weeks of sitting in a house with no heat, we found ourselves bundled up with every article of clothing we had. The temperature in the room was well below freezing level. It was during our second week when I began to accept the idea that we may die in here. We were all scattered in the living room. We sat and laid in silence. The only noise emitted was our shivering. Everything ached. My chest felt heavy from weeks of unbearable cold. Our throats were raspy and dry. We barely slept. I suspected we had developed pneumonia and hypothermia. Monica coughed brutally and consistently. It was when she stopped coughing that panic began to set in.
"Monica,"
I whispered, emitted vapor from my mouth. No reply. No cough. I struggled to my feet, enduring brutal body aches. Monica was sprawled on the floor. Her eyes were closed, but her breath was labored and harsh.
"Guys," I said, turning to everyone else.
Andrew muttered something unrecognizable. Jeremy wheezed. Felicia didn't even respond.
I sat next to Monica and began to cry. I had lost all track of time. I don't know if an hour or a full day had passed. I glanced around the room and saw my party just sprawled out, looking deathly. Some breathed intensely. Others barely breathed at all. I myself felt lightheaded. Every inch of me hurt. The room felt to be rotating slowly, and I began to sweat. I felt hot, and I realized I developed a fever. I closed my eyes. I awoke and noticed nobody had moved positions. Nothing had changed, except one thing. In the corner of the living room, a tall figure stood in the shadows. He wore a dark robe, hood over his head, and stood well over 8 feet tall. I stared. This wasn't real, was it? I must just be a fever-induced vision, I told myself. I stared for hours. He didn't move. The room's only movement came from the labored breathing of Monica and Paula's chests. The room's only noise came from Monica's breathing, gasping for air like a fish out of water. Suddenly, the gasping stopped. The silence was deafening. From the corner, the figure stepped forward. His slimness was skeleton-like, and he stepped beside the laying bodies, carefully avoiding to step on anyone. He made his way towards Monica.
"No," I whispered. "Stop!"
No one seemed to hear me or react to my words. I wondered if this was all a hallucination. The figure stood next to Monica and knelt down. It lifted its arm, revealing a bone-like hand with fingers of rotting flesh. He placed his hand on Monica's head. He swayed her hair out of her face and drew its head close. It laid a kiss on her forehead. I stared in silence, physically and emotionally unable to protest. The hooded skeleton rose slowly and returned to the corner. That's the last image I remember. The next time I opened my eyes, light blinded my corneas. Bright sunlight burst through the windows, and men with medical gear were carrying my friends away.
"This one's awake too,"
screamed a man kneeling near me.
"You're gonna be okay," he whispered softly.
I was lifted, placed on a stretcher, and evacuated to a hospital, where I was reunited with all of my friends, all except Monica. All of us were diagnosed with pneumonia and a variety of other illnesses. Eventually, we all made full recoveries, except for a phobia towards snow and extreme cold. I don't remember what the doctors labeled the cause of her death, but they mentioned that they'd predicted she'd been dead for days. I never told anyone of the hooded figure in the corner. I doubt anyone would believe me. But I know who that figure was. And if more time had passed, I bet I would have gotten to know him better.